The Hebrew Order of David is one of our community's oldest and most established global outreach organizations. Join Stan Clare for the next hour as he explores the issues facing the men in the community. The HOD Hour is a fundraising initiative for the HOD. Welcome to the HOD Hour with Stan Clare. This is the HOD Hour with Stan Clare.
Hi, and I'm Stan Clare. And just wanted to say sorry about if you can hear an echo, but on the eve of only hours away from lockdown, we thought it would be nice to have a chat about Pesach wines and wines in particular. We've been working with Cape Jewel Kosher Wines for the last 2 weeks or so to try and sell and also to raise some funds for the Hebrew Order of David. Tonight we are privileged to have Francois van Zyl, who's the master winemaker at Cape Jewel Kosher Wines. And he has a history, he has a BSc in Enology, which I presume means wine, at Stellenbosch. He's over 25 years in winemaking. He's the former CEO of Simon's Vlei Cellar for nearly 18 years. And he's also a former winemaker at the acclaimed 300-ton boutique winery of Grote Post. He's trained in South Africa, USA, and Australia. And welcome, Francois.
Hi, Stan. Greetings here from the Western Cape. Thank you for the opportunity tonight so that we can speak a little bit about Cape Jewel Wines.
Right, so from what I understand, Cape Jewel Wine sources its grapes from vineyards all over the Western Cape and processes them into wine at your Simon's Vlei facility. And it's also under the direct supervision of the Cape Town Beit Din. So kosher and everything is kosher.
Yeah, Stan, I think we are currently, Cape Jewel is the biggest supplier of, or the biggest producer of kosher products in South Africa, or kosher wine in South Africa. And it is correct, as you say, I think Cape Jewel is very, very uniquely positioned that we are not, it's almost like we're not locked down, if I can use the word, or locked out in a certain region. So what we are trying to do is we're trying to source our grapes from different regions. And the reason for that is we want to get the best quality product in bottle. So it is not always that the best Chardonnay is grown in Paul. So then we go and source those grapes in Robertson where we know that we've got good quality there. And it's the same with Merlot and Cab. We know that Merlot is more cooler climate grape. So then we go and source it from those areas. And the other thing is we don't have a specific facility. We are looking for that in the future, but I think that is again something that makes Cape Jewel quite flexible is we're utilizing facilities at different premises, and that also makes it possible for us to preserve the quality so that we don't necessarily have to drive over long distances. For us, it is about quality in the bottle and to make sure that we get the best quality there, and that is why we are sourcing from quite a wide area of regions for grapes.
So to the uninitiated who think that, you know, wine comes from bottle stores, just let's take us through the process of a little bit of a process of wine making for people who would like to know from the beginning. You get the grapes, you put them in a vat, you stand on them and squash out the juice, and then I suppose you get either red feet or white feet, depending on what you're making. So, yeah, take us through the process.
Stan, I think what I'll do is I'll take you through the process of an ordinary winemaking process, and then I'll maybe just show and say where it is different with the kosher wines.
Yes, that's so important.
So where it starts is everything starts in the vineyards, and what is interesting, and I don't think a lot of listeners knows it, the harvest that we're going to harvest in 2021 has been already formed in the vineyards round of about October 2019. So the weather conditions that was prevalent in October 2019 or 2019 will determine what the quality will be in the harvest of 2021. Obviously, there's macro and micro conditions that's also going to play a role in terms of your wind conditions, your moisture, and how your soil can maintain that moisture in over a long period of time. So that is the first thing. So when that is done, then we start get to the picking process. The kosher wines is all hand-picked. From there, we transported it to the cellars. We crush and destem. That is where we remove the berries from the stems, and then we crush it. So we crush the berries so it can release the juice. Then, in terms of white wines, we usually separate the skins immediately from the juice, and we leave it overnight to settle. Then we rack it. So what we mean is when we rack it is we after 24 hours, you'll find that there's usually a lot of solids still present in the juice. So that settles to the bottom. So it's almost like coffee. We make coffee and the coffee will settle on the bottom and you will have the coffee on top. Then usually after that we'll ferment it, and after fermentation with white wines we do it in stainless steel tanks. We do it around about 12 to 14 degrees Celsius. Takes us about 2 weeks. Then we protein stabilize it, cold stabilize it, and then we more or less put it in the bottle. The difference between white and red wine making is red and white wine making is almost the same. The only difference is we keep the skins on the juice during fermentation with red wines. We also run it at a little bit of a higher temperature, and the reason for that is we want to extract the phenols in the skins. So again, it's almost like brewing a cup of tea. So you've got your tea in the pot, you cook it, and the longer you cook it and at the higher temperature, you're going to extract more flavor. So that is what we want with and why we keep the red skins in contact with the juice, and that gives us the red color also.
So if Francois, are you bringing different wines and mixing them at that time, or are you doing these separately and mixing them afterwards?
No, Stan, what we usually do is we will make the cultivars separately. So we will always make, say for instance it's a Merlot, we will keep it as a Merlot and a Cab, and we will always do the blending afterwards. Even if we bring in, so for instance this year with our 2020 Merlot, we bought in some Merlot from the Paarl area, and then we bought in some Merlot from the Somerset West area. So even in these cases, we keep the Merlots apart from different regions. So we want to see after fermentation and when the wine is ready, we want to see what the qualities are, and then we are blending it together.
Okay, so we've gone as far as now. You've mixed it. You've got it in the vat. It's doing its thing, and I suppose that fermentation process takes quite a while. What then?
So after the fermentation is done with the red wines, then we go through what we call a secondary fermentation on the red wines. So it's a malolactic fermentation. And that is just to get the product microbial stable. There is not a fermentation in your bottle when you get it on the shelves. And after that, the process in the Cape Jewel wines is is exactly the same for the white wines. So currently, all the white wines that is produced by Cape Jewel is unoaked, and it is the same with the red wines. So all the red wines is also unoaked. And what we are looking for in future is we would love to introduce a range, if you can call it a barrel select or a selected range, where we actually mature these wines on oak, and that gives you a little bit longer maturity or the lifespan of the wine, if you can put it that way.
So do you keep some of these wines in the barrels for years, or is it a series of a year, a month? How long does it take?
No, for us, if you look at the Cape Jewel wines, the white wines, we usually say that the people, so when you look at the back of the bottle, you will see that the vintage of the wines is not in the front label. So we put the vintage of the wines on the back label, and usually the rule of thumb is on white wines, you've got to consume it within 2.5 years since harvest date. So white wines, we will usually go and we will produce it, we will stabilize it, and we will bottle it as soon as possible and get it to market as soon as possible. In red wines, what we want to do is we want to keep it a little bit longer in the stainless steel tanks. And the reason for that is the tannin structure of the wines is sometimes a little bit rough. So the wines doesn't drink that easily. So for us, it is better so that we don't release within the same year of harvest. But you will see that this year we will probably, due to the fact that we are quite new and new to the market, in some of the ranges or some of the cultivars, we will have to release a little bit earlier this year. So you will find that we will have a 2020 red already in 2020. But like I said, the ideal is actually to release that only in 2021. And that is only out of a perspective to make the wine as drinkable as possible. And then with the red wines, you can easily mature these wines for 3 to 5 years, even to 6 years. But I think 5 to 6 years, then you must consume it. It is not like a wine that is being stored and fermented in oak, small oak barrels that can last for 10 or 15 years.
So when people invite you over for these old wines that have been matured for 50 years and so on, is that a whole different process?
That is a whole different process, Dan. That is it is a different process that starts within the vineyards. So that process starts, first of all, you will make very much sure that it is terroir specific for that specific cultivar. Then it will start with your you will prune it differently. Your irrigation practices will be differently. So you want a small berry. Your yields is going to be much lower. You're going to work the wine harder because it's going to last longer. And then usually it goes into small barrels for anything from 18 to 24 months. And then after that, it's probably another year in the bottle before you would release that.
So this business of winemaking is not a quick thing. It's not going to happen today. You're planning already 2021. You've already sourced the grapes. So it's you need to be able to sustain this process for over a period of time. It's never ending.
No, it is. And the thing is it's what a lot of the marketers not always understand. It is not a country. So it's not something where you can just go and mix a lot of flavors and then you've got it and you can put it in a bottle and you can do it 10, 15 times in a year, like beer that you can brew about every 2 weeks. So it is something you more or less live with the vineyards. And you got to be very specific. And the other thing is you must make a choice. It's almost like marriage in life. You choose your wife and then you marry and then hopefully you remain married for a long time. And it's the same with vineyards. You must make a
plan. You mature at a different rate though.
That's for sure. And so you must make your pick of vineyard. You got to make sure that it's right. And then you got to start working with it. And every year you adjust it a little bit. You maybe prune it a little bit different. Your irrigation practices are a little bit different. Your canopy practices are a little bit different. But then you work it until you get to a point where you get to the product. But unfortunately, this is something that takes trial and error. And that is not the frustrating thing of wine, but one chance in a year. And that is also why a lot of our winemakers, when we get opportunity, we will go overseas to the Northern Hemisphere so that we can do a harvest there also. And that gives us the opportunity to also to learn more and to get more experience at the end of the day. But the planning part of this is essential. It is something that takes time, and if you want to do it right, then you must put time and effort in it.
So if you talk about, people say this was a good year, that was a bad year, what actually differentiates the years and the quality?
So what differentiates a year in many ways is you get three types of climate. So you get your meso, that is the bigger climate, then you get your macro, that's in where the vineyards are more or less standing, and then you get your micro, that is actually with more or less in the canopy. When it's a good year or a bad year, it's going to be determined mainly by the weather conditions that was in that year. So that will be whether you had enough rain, at the right times. So you want rain, but in certain times of the year. Then the other thing is also what is very important is like you say, it's your wind, it's also, was it very warm? Was it not warm? Because what you want is you want a gradual maturation process. You want the vineyards to mature gradually. So it is not something that must be rushed. So what you actually want is you want a long ripening period. And the longer that can be, the more in balance the product will be. So what happens a lot of times in warmer climate areas then is you'll find that the ripening period is shorter. So you'll find that those wines, alcohols, this is a little bit higher due to the fact that we have got to leave the grapes on the vineyard a little bit longer. But then what happens is you'll find that the acids sometimes drop out. So now you've got to add acid to the wine. And as soon as you start adding stuff to a product, then you start impacting the quality negatively. So what you want is you want grapes that ripen over a long period of time, which is in balance, and where you actually just manage what nature gives you through the cellar. You don't try to add anything to it. You only try to manage what is given to you. So at the end is when you got that bunch of grapes in your hand, there's a certain potential in your hand, and that bunch of grapes tells you that there is a potential, and that is where they want to go. All that you want to do is you just want to manage the process.
So this is the Hebrew Order of David. It's an international fraternity with lodges around the world. And so it's largely a Jewish audience listening to Chai FM, which is a station that we're on. And we're talking about kosher wines. Now we're coming up to the season, which is Passover, and it's a bit, you know, we're very particular about what wine we have, and that it's got to be kosher. So how do you ensure that, I mean, obviously it's under the supervision of the Beit Din, but somewhere you've got to be doing the work. They're just going to come and give a watching brief. So what actually makes it kosher, and what makes it, and is there, are there differing, you know, are we going to have a good year or a bad year on Passover wine?
First of all, I do hope that you and your listeners already have your Passover wine. Since it seems that after lockdown tonight, it's going to be very difficult to get wine.
Jews, they can make a plan to get wine. We'll always get some wine, but, you know, and of course, part of the discussion is whether the matzah, which we're going to eat, is okay, where you got it, and how did it come, and how many were on the shelf, and you know, the wine is the same thing. So, you know, there's going to be comment about whether we're, besides the fact that you're going to be making different prayers on the wine, and, you know, blessings on each of the wines, and you're supposed to finish, you know, four glasses in the evening. So, you know, it's very important that we have something to discuss as well, besides the actual holiday.
Yeah. No, same is, how it differs is, first of all, the grape. So what makes a kosher wine different from an ordinary wine is, a kosher wine is everything is handpicked. So when the grapes arrive at the cellar, everything is handpicked. And then, in our business, my business partner in Cape Town is Sean Galga, but with us, it's a very, that a very functional role with us. Without a Mashgiach, we can do nothing within the cellar. So he plays a very, very specific role. So I can take it from the vineyard to the cellar. And as soon as the offloading process starts, then the Mashgiachs take over the winemaking process. So what I will do is I will instruct him beforehand, and then most of the time I am on premises with him. Not most of the time, 100% of the time. So when he's offloading, I'm standing next to him, but he's doing all the work. So usually how it works is with the white wines, we will, he will be in charge of everything from the offloading, the pressing, getting the wines into the settling tanks, and then he will rack the wines from the settling tank. Then with the white wines, what we usually do is we pasteurize the wines just prior to fermentation. So for us, it's important we use a process what we call flash pasteurization. So it's a process where we take the temperature up of the wine very quickly and down very quickly. So it impacts not that much on the quality of the product. Why we're also doing it before fermentation is everything that we do before fermentation is during fermentation. It's, you can almost say before fermentation, everything you do is forgiven. Fermentation pulls it right, but if you do that afterwards, you might affect the quality of the product. Red wines is a little bit different. There, the Mashgiach runs the whole process through the primary process, the secondary process, and then we flash pasteurize just after the secondary fermentation. So, and then after that, we and I can work again with the product under supervision of the Mashgiach, and then we go through the whole process of stabilizing and everything. So this is where the main process is different. Now, in the past, what the people have done is we've cooked or pasteurized the grapes with the juice, with the pips, and with the skins. And that sometimes gave a sort of a taste that was not beneficial. So with the newer technology nowadays, we can preserve the quality. And I was a year or two, I was in Israel, and I presented a comparative tasting to the guys where we had Mouvichal product and we had non-Mouvichal product. And they actually couldn't differentiate between the two. So the fact it was, I think, that the quality of Mouvichal wines is inferior to non-Mouvichal. But Stan, I can tell you that is definitely with the technology nowadays, it's definitely not the case. Another thing is the chemicals that we use are very specific. So all the chemicals that we are using, like the yeast, and if I'm talking about chemicals, I'm talking not about chemicals like we all know, like cleaning agents or whatever. It's your yeast. It's your natural tartaric acids and stuff like that. So that is all kosher for Passover. And that states again that the yeast is cultivated on a certain growth medium. So all the yeast that we use in this product is cultivated on non-wheat growth mediums so that it can be kosher for Passover.
Okay, so do other chemicals like sulfur and that play a part? Is that essential in the process?
It is essential in the process, Stan, but what we try and do is we try to limit the addition of sulfur. Sulfur is a preservative. It is a natural element that is in the earth. I'm not going to give myself out as a master of Jewish law and what is prohibited and what is not. It's a basic element of the earth, and if I understand that correctly, then that is already kosher, or it's allowed for kosher.
Yes.
So, but at the end of the day, it's a preservative. It helps to keep the wine a little bit longer, but we want the level of sulfur dioxide as low as possible. And that is, again, also a measure of a good quality product. A product with a low sulfur dioxide level is it's also a measure of quality.
So a lot of, I've had a number of questions around the, around vegans. So what is the, these are not vegan wines. I mean, these are wines for, they don't qualify to be a, to be a vegan wine, or do they?
No. Stan, they can, they are vegetarian and vegan. So, a product is, first of all, it will be vegetarian for everybody.
Because it's great.
Due to the fact that, and the other thing is everything else that we use, like the yeast that we use in the process, it is yeast that goes through its own life cycle, and after its life cycle, it dies and we take it out. But we don't use products like gelatin. There's a product called icing glass, and it's not glass. It is a product that is derived from the bladder of a fish. And then there's, I think, milk and eggs and stuff like that that's used as fining agents. So we don't use it in the wine. So our perception or our goal is minimal intervention. That what nature gives us, we want to put it in the bottle. So, yeah, you can classify these products all as vegan also.
So now when you're talking about the wines, I mean, grape juice, I presume, comes off earlier. So once you've got to a point you've made the juice, you can have white or red. I'm thinking grape juice, and then you can just bottle it from there. Is that the process? Or does that also have to go through a separate process?
No, Stan, the grape juice, in our grape juice that we use, first of all, I'm glad that I actually got the opportunity tonight to speak to your listeners. Our grape juice is mainly made out of Shiraz grapes. And there's a reason why we use it. First of all, it gives us a good color, and it also gives us a good, fragrance, but got a very good aroma also to the product. So predominantly in our grape juice, it is Shiraz grapes that we use in there. And the other thing that I convey to listeners is, although there's no indication on the product that it is non-alcoholic, the grape juice of Cape Jewel is 100% non-alcoholic. So there's no alcohol in it. Although there's a alcohol warning on the bottom, but that is 0% alcohol, pure grape juice.
And I mean, that was a way of trying to keep the kids quiet, you know. I mean, we need a little bit of alcohol.
sometimes you need to keep them quiet. But the thing is, Stan, is the process also with the grape juice, due to the fact that we're using Shiraz grapes, it's a little bit later in the season if we would have used white grapes. And again, there we take it immediately off the skins, and then it goes through the same process of wine of we stabilize it, protein, then we cold stabilize it, and then we put it in the bottle. So the only thing that doesn't happen, it is not a fermentation process that happens there. And the other thing is, but otherwise it is, if you take a Shiraz in the grape juice now that you got and you got it in the bottle, then it's just the one is unfermented and the one is fermented. So yeah.
So now, as I said, we're talking, this is the Hebrew Order of David, it's the HRD hour. We're talking wine, and I mean, it's very central to a lot of the activities of Jews, the Friday nights. We make a bruch over the wine, and then, so we're talking about, which we haven't discussed, is the Kiddush wine, the sacramental, what you call the sweet sacramental red. So what is that? Is that sugar added? Is that its own sugar? How does that work?
Stan, first of all, I think I must be very careful here because the recipe that we use in Cape Jewel is a bit of a secret of how we do it.
Okay. And don't give away any secrets because a lot of these people make their own wine.
So I'm going to tell you more or less what we are doing and how it differs. So the only thing is we do add sugar to the process, but it's again, it's where you add the sugar to the process. And then again, it's a natural fermentation process that goes through. We let the yeast do its job, and then again, it follows the same path as the rest of the products. But the thing is with Kiddush, is again, what we experience is there's certain cultivars that it works with, and there's certain cultivars that it doesn't work with. So we know exactly what cultivars it works with. We know out of what area it comes with, and we know how to manipulate how to use the process to get the alcohol in there, but also to get the sugar content that is needed for that. And that is actually where the secret lies in it is to get those three things in balance.
So this is now a slightly thicker wine. I mean, it has more body to it. And when you drink it, I mean, after four glasses on the night, you feel pretty drowsy. So it's got to have a fair content of alcohol, but I presume not as much as the actual, your normal wines.
No, Stan, it actually has got the same alcohol content as your normal wines. Our Kiddush wines, the alcohol content, like I said, there's a few things how we do it, and due to the process that we are following, we get to a little bit of a higher alcohol at the end of the product, which we bring down a little bit. But at the end of the day, you're going to end up with a 13 to 14 alcohol on that product that is the same as any other red wine.
So the sweetness, I'm presuming if you're using the right kind of grapes, then you're limiting the amount of sugar. So that also helps in the process. But are there particular grapes which you use, or is it to kind of you pick each year, or is it a standard sort of thing? Was that the secret?
No, Stan. That is in our situation. The Kiddush product for us is from a very specific grape type, and we pick it at a quite high belling or high sugar content. And the reason for that, again, Stan, is we want to add as little as possible to the product. But for us, the secret, I think, in our Kiddush lie in there that it is a specific cultivar. I think a lot of the other people use different cultivars or blends of cultivars. But we are on a single variety that we use there, and we manage the vineyards in a certain manner, and we ferment or handle the product in the cellar also in a certain manner.
So just to come back to the wines now, to people who sort of are occasional wine drinkers, and I presume that at the end of the day, taste is everything. But what does one look for in a red or a white? Is there something specific, or just do you just go according to what you like?
Stan, I'm a firm believer that what works for me doesn't necessarily work for somebody else. So whenever I present a tasting to anybody or to a group of people, I will always tell them that I can't tell you, you got to smell guava in this product, or you got to smell this, or you got to taste that. Because as you go through life, and say, for instance, you've eaten a piece of chocolate, you make your own connection in your brain with what is chocolate for you and what is chocolate and how it fits into your brain. That perception is different for me than for somebody else. So if you look at white wines, especially in the Cape Jewel range, what you're looking there for is you want a clean wine, a wine that is not too heavy but very accessible, and that's got prominent fruit flavors. So it is not something, it's a wine that you can drink with food, drink with food, but you can also enjoy it on its own. So in the price points and where the Cape Jewel is positioned in the market, that is what you want there. You want something that you can, if you want to drink two or three or four glasses of it, then you must be able to do that. But you must be, there must be a little bit of seriousness on the back so that you can also enjoy it with food. So I don't know if that answers your questions, Dan.
Well, just I'm trying to really get a on what one would look for, in the sense that what would, I mean, if you're drinking white, does it go particularly well with a certain food types, and red the same? I mean, and which ones of those would you drink with certain, or is it just a matter of choice? Where what you, where, as you said, what you taste.
You're going to kill me because I had the other night awesome steak with an awesome Chardonnay. So it's not necessary to say that you got to drink red wine with steak or white wine with fish. It is all a matter of preference. And how I usually see it and how I usually do my pairing, Stan, is a lighter wine like your Chenin Blanc usually goes with a lighter dish. So if it's a salad or if it's a light meat like fish or something light in red meat also, your Chardonnay, for instance, with your whites, that is a little bit more heavy, that goes with a more heavy, heavier dish also. And it's the same with your red wines. You'll find that your Pinotage is maybe a little bit lighter. Your Merlot, your Cab, your Shiraz is more serious wines. So that goes better with heavier dishes, as you can say it. But the thing is what you must try to pair is you must try to pair, almost you can say, I'm a little bit of out of English now. Not the weight of the food, but you must just match it. And at the end of the day, it's a personal preference. I think the days where somebody tells you that you've got to drink a cab with this and you've got to do that, that is over. I think there is too much of etiquette around wine. At the end of the day, I think my wife actually does all the wine buying for our household. And the interesting thing for me always is when I get back and she got the wines and everything, and I ask her, but why did you buy that wine? And she always tell me, but it tastes nice. So it is not, again, about whether it's a cab, a Merlot, a Shiraz. It's whether it tastes nice to you or it doesn't taste nice to you. Do you like it or don't you like it? And like, do you like it with a certain food or not? So it's a lot is personal preference then.
So, and then let's talk a little bit about health. I mean, a lot of people tell you should have a glass of wine a day. I mean, some will tell you you've got to have a whiskey a day, whatever it is. But I mean, is the red or the white supposedly helping you health-wise? Is it supposed to be good for the heart, or is it just a matter of coming home and having something so that you can have peace in the home?
Stan, I must say, in my case, it's about 60% just peace in the home. But there is definitely... There are definitely health benefits in wine. First of all, this is what you say. It's just having one glass of wine or two glasses of wine helps you relax. So that is first of all. Then there's different compounds within grapes that is beneficial to health. But there it is more towards your red varieties. And you'll find that, especially in Shiraz, there's a compound called resveratrol. And that is the most in Shiraz. So there's definitely health benefits, but it's like anything in life. If you consume too much, then you lose that health benefit. So for me, the benefits of health in wine is, first of all, is the relaxation, first of all. Then the conversations that you have with your mates, your wife, or your friends, or whoever. And then it is what is in the wine in terms of your ingredients and how it can help you. But in moderation.
So I always say moderation is fine as long as you don't take it to extremes. But so we're talking to François van Zyl. He's a master winemaker with Cape Jewel Wines, with Kosher Wines. Also available for Pesach, which is Kosher Pesach. And François, you've been quite fascinating about your knowledge of all of these things. And obviously, you, over all the years, you have a BSc in Enology. And it seems like you've traveled. So are you called around the world, or is this kind of expert kind of activity to go and talk to people like in Israel and you go and see other wine farms and so on? Is it export, or is it just for knowledge, or a bit of both?
No, Stan, it's for me, it's about knowledge. And the thing is for us to make a kosher product is you must understand your consumer base. You must understand what is it, what people are looking for in a kosher product. You must understand, what they want in terms of quality. And if you don't go overseas and you just stay in the local market, then your mindset gets very much blocked, if you can put it that way. So you need to go overseas to see what is trending, why it is trending, what type of technology there is available, how certain practices are changing. The reality is in South Africa, the kosher community in terms of wine producing are very small. So if you want to learn more and to get your techniques better, you definitely got to travel. And you got to go and see how they do it. Take what you see there, because what you can't do is you just can't go there. What they do there, just come and implement it here. You got to, because your circumstances here are different. So you got to learn there, and then you got to adjust it to your local circumstances.
So as far as product in comparison to overseas products, how does Cape Jewel wines, how do you match up with the kosher products overseas? I mean, is it competitive? Are you getting into that market?
No, Stan, we're definitely getting into that market, and it is very competitive. I think in some cases we're doing a better job than the guys overseas. So the wines, I think nowadays it's a case of quality is a given. If it doesn't have good quality in the product, then it's dead in the water. So the quality is very good, and for us it's important. We want to the local market is predominantly for us very important. I'm a firm believer that if you cannot play a home game, then you can't play a away game. So the local market is for us very important, and to get it right in South Africa. And we hopefully by the middle of the year we will be exporting to Israel. We already exported to Australia. We in the works to start exporting to the USA and to Britain also. But I must say the virus has postponed things a little bit.
Sure.
So we would have liked to move a little bit faster, but sometimes you've got to be patient.
Are the markets overseas receptive, or is it a hard sell?
No, very receptive, Stan. And the fact that there's not a lot of kosher product coming from South Africa, it is not really a hard sell. It's at the end of the day, it is you are able to be very competitive on market or on shelf due to the currency. And South Africa remains an interesting country. It is a lot of people still doesn't see it as a country. They, if you talk to them, they still think that it's the southern part of Africa. So there's a lot of interesting things for them, and they find the wines interesting, especially something like Chenin Blanc and Pinotage. It's not something that is cultivated in the rest of the world. So it's very specific to South Africa. I'm actually talking now a little bit of nonsense. Chenin is also grown a lot in France.
Sure.
But so at the end of the day, it's the wines are unique, and the people like their taste and how it comes over.
And the area that you're working in the Cape, is that the best place for the growing of wines? I mean, obviously it's well known around the world, but I mean, are there other places in South Africa where it could grow, or is it really confined to the Cape?
I must say, Stan, this is the other day I was at a wine cellar. This guy doesn't produce kosher wines. He produces a commercial product, not readily available in South Africa. He's doing just small volumes, and he actually gets his grapes from Prisca. up in the Northern Cape, and I would never have thought that you would get grapes from there. And so it's again, it's all about parcels, and that is what's making it interesting. So the Cape remains the best area, Paarl, Stellenbosch, Wellington, Robertson, up to Vredendal, that remains the best area. But you get pockets in the rest of South Africa where you can actually make, where you can cultivate high quality grapes and you can make good quality wine. That's for sure.
And is there ample supply of grapes here for making wine? Or does the market sort of grow?
I think there's competition, in the market. I think your stone fruits, stuff like your blueberries and that is big competition for your grapes, especially in the Paarl, Stellenbosch, Wellington, Malmesbury areas. I think, if you go more towards Worcester, Robertson, those areas, I think there is more predominantly, grape farmers there. But yeah, there's more than enough grapes to supply the demand that there is. There was, for about 2 years ago, there was a little bit where the demand outstripped the supply, but it was a perfect storm in the wine world where the Northern Hemisphere had a bad harvest. We had a bad harvest in the Southern Hemisphere. So at the end of the day, but usually there's a balance between the demand and supply.
And the wine farmers here are very skilled. I mean, they've done this for basically centuries. They've been growing wine in these areas. So they must be pretty good at judging the weather, judging the conditions in order to bring the right grapes.
Stan, they are very clued. But the thing is what is necessary is I think climate change is something that is with us. And we were very fortunate in the past 2 years to have very good rain years last year and this year. Well, not this year, but last year and the year before that. But the thing is the farmers do have to adapt to the different or the changing in climate. So sure, they got to be more efficient in terms of their water use. I think it's also very important that the guys must, must farm for the future. So they've got to look at their soils and how they can preserve their soils. And there's a lot of techniques and stuff that they need to change as times changes. Otherwise, you're going to become a dinosaur.
Right. So we've been talking to Francois Van Zyl. He's a master winemaker with Cape Jewel Wines. If you want to look on their website, you can go online and place orders. You're a bit late for Pesach, but it's www, of course, Cape Jewel Wines. Cape and it's Jewel, J-E-W-E-L, wines.co.za.co.za. And you can go online and see the different products. You can see pictures of the bottles. You can see the pictures of the Cape, which also makes it interesting. Somehow, I don't know, when you go to the Cape, the wine tastes different when you're drinking it in Joburg. But I suppose that's just a matter of perception. But Francois, thank you so much for the input. It's been very fascinating. And I wish all our listeners happy Pesach, which is coming up in a little while. And thank you to Cape Jewel Wines for coming on the show and explaining what they do. And if you want to buy their wines, you go online. It is available in certain stores in Johannesburg. You'll be hearing more about them in the years to come. And one day we'll come back to speak to Francois, and good luck with the marketing of this wine, which I think is fantastic. And I've tasted a few of the bottles, not the whole bottle, but I've had some glasses, and really thank you again for coming on the show. It's Cape Jewel Wines. This is the Hebrew Order of David Hour, and I wish everybody a good Shabbos, and I hope everybody remains safe over this lockdown period. And good night from the Hebrew Order of David in Johannesburg.
Vehicles wanted. Arnold Orkin from Auto Africa is on the lookout for cars. He'll buy any make, any model, in any condition, even accident damaged vehicles and non-runners.
I've been in the automotive industry for over 50 years, and I'd love to chat to you about buying your used vehicle.
So call Arnold Orkin now on 082-823-7826. That's 082-823-7826.
Introducing another innovation from Dis-Chem's clinic services, Care Connect. With Care Connect, your first stop is a clinic sister who will complete a health assessment and professional consultation. Should you need a doctor, your nurse can provide a video consultation with a Dis-Chem Care Connect doctor. The doctor can renew your repeat or provide a prescription, supply any referral letter or sick note needed. You can get your meds there and then. Care Connect, only from Dis-Chem. Pharmacists who care.
Norwood mall, your moments isn't just another slogan. It's what makes Norwood Mall unique. Not just the moments you share, but the moments that take your breath away. Perhaps it's the leisurely hours or the great diversity of stores, including fashion, restaurants, beauty decor, travel, and a pick and pay hyper. Corner Hamlin and 6th Avenue. See norwoodmall.co.za. Norwood Mall, your mall, your moments.